You're listening to Hearth Casual, the Hearthstone podcast for tavern brawlers, dungeon runners, and everyone else enjoying the game off the ranked ladder.
Well met, and welcome to episode 37 of Hearth Casual, a very special Saviors of Uldum preview episode. I, of course, am Brian Black, and with me, as always, the resident dad legend of the show, Mr. Kevin Ellis. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing quite well, although I'm not sure I'm ready for this show, honestly, because, you know, I come home from work, have a little dinner, and just get to relax a little bit, and then we get to record. But this time, I'm still hungry, and I think what I'm going to get is a Naga sandwich. You know, just chomp down on that. It probably tastes a little fishy, but that's okay. Changes the cost of my spells in my hand to 5, and that seems fine, depending on what spells you've got. So, sure, yeah.
Sure, or if that's not your thing, if you're thinking of, you know, being an anarchist and having breakfast for dinner, you can have an order of serpent eggs, you know?
Oh, no, that's too chaotic for me. I don't want that. Nah. All reason would go out from this world.
Well, we definitely have a lot to talk about today, especially considering that Saviors of Uldum, the pre-release, is happening this weekend. And if you've bought a pre-release pack, of course, you will be able to open your packs if you go to a fireside gathering, or as a reminder, you can create your own private fireside gathering. You know, if you can't go to one of the bigger gatherings, create a private one and invite a couple friends over that you know play Hearthstone and just open up your packs, have fun, check it out. I'm debating on whether or not I want to do that whole thing that we did last time, Kevin, as far as like the private fireside. Yeah, because like part of me wants to just open everything all up at once. It's like opening that first 50 packs to me, it's a tease because I can open them up, but if I do a private fireside gathering, I can't really do too much with them. So I think I'm just going to wait for Tuesday and open them all up at once. But I can understand if you're not that patient.
Yeah, there is something about when you open them and then just look at them that it's kind of frustrating. If you were actually at a true fireside gathering with a bunch of friends or even like a structured one within your city, totally different story. You get to take part in those extra brawls that they've got, including, I believe, one of them still that limitless one where you can just build a deck with the new cards and there's not even
I want that brawl as a regular brawl so bad.
Right.
I feel like they are keeping that exclusive, the pre-release, as a way to to encourage people to go to it, because that's like one of the only times you get to have a brawl like that. And I've got to say, it's not going to happen this year because it's just not in the cards for me, pun intended. But with, I don't know, maybe with the third set, I can make it work out. We'll see. Yeah. When Deathwing has its day, who knows?
I've got to think there's plenty of stuff around you. You just got to, find the right time.
I have searched. The closest thing to me is in Toledo.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So it's a 40-minute drive, but I would do it. I would do it. It's just a matter of not working that day. And unfortunately, I work on weekends usually.
Right. Gotcha. Well, or you could fly out to Kansas City for one of them, although we're not having one.
Hey, if you're paying for the ticket, I'm all in.
Okay, sounds good. I'll run that by my wife. And
you do that. Well, folks, we aren't going to talk about decks that we've made this week because, honestly, with the next episode, I'm sure Kevin and I are going to have at least one deck, if not a couple, to talk about. And just any decks that we talk about right now are going to be really irrelevant next week. So
very short shelf life of those. So
We are going to skip that. As far as the brawl goes, no like official brawl breakdown. The brawl is the return of the chess of event, where it's a not so friendly game of chess. You get to actually add 6 cards of your own into the chess deck. We've talked about this on the show before, actually, and my quick advice to you, if you want a quick win on that brawl, is for your minions, choose things that are relatively cheap. They don't need to have super big effects because both of you have 20 life. Choose cheap minions that create other cheap minions. Come to think of it, I mean, I told Kevin I was playing Raven Familiar. Now that I think about it, lackeys would actually probably be okay in this.
Yeah, I could see that. Depending on the class and which generator you've got, but yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I think going Warlock, maybe, and going with the Evil Genius, because Evil Genius can kill one of your chess pieces, which actually, in the chess game, allows you to kind of, like, fix a little bit of your strategy, because positioning is so important.
Yeah, true. And you'd free up some board space for more lackeys, so
yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So,
that's a cool idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, last time this brawl came out, just to say a quick note here,
sure.
too, we talked and raved so much about how, like, innovative it is that it is the chess with a little bit of sideboard. And, yeah, seeing it back, I feel the same. I still think it's one of the more, like, just interesting and weird brawls out there. And that when they first came out with this, they'd gone in kind of a totally new direction of stuff we hadn't really seen yet. And we've seen crazy things since then, for sure. But this was one of the first ones, I think, on this show where we stepped back and said, this is really weird and interesting, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, something that I've just realized, I mean, I really want to talk about Saviors, like, right away.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, I just realized, Kevin, this brawl is not Randomonium. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I almost feel like the week before a new expansion comes out, unless it was like something that was specifically, I think last time we had, oh no, that was for the Siege of the Heist, the Dalaran Heist thing. But it felt like the brawl before the launch of expansion would always be something not too big. It usually would be Randomonium, something, you know, your basic kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
Because they want to put the focus on the new expansion. This is the first time it hasn't happened. In fact, I'm trying to remember, when was the last time Randomonium even happened?
Like
2 months ago?
We could look this up. Maybe they're phasing it out.
I have no problem with less frequent randomoniums, but all I got to say is kudos for the lack of randomonium this week, whoever made the decision for that. All right, enough about that. Let's move on to Saviors of Uldum. What I've decided to do this time, there are so many cards that we haven't talked about. I don't want to talk about all 135 cards, but at the same time, and Kevin, I think you'll agree with me here, I was trying to think of a top five for this set, which is what we normally do the episode before a set comes out, and I didn't want to limit myself to five.
Oh, no. Yeah, I want to talk about all of them, but that's just not the format of this show, and that's okay. I find some value in doing what we're about to do as well and go class by class, picking out our favorites and having some discussion there. Because I'll say this. So when we were setting up the show and everything, Brian here had written out the notes for us, and he'd gone into each class and listed what his favorite was per class before I even got started on that work. So yeah. I got in there today to finish that up and catch up to him. And I deliberately did not look at his list when I was filling mine out. And then if I chose the same thing as Brian here, I left it the same. But I'll tell you guys, spoiler alert, there was only one class that we had the same choice on. And I think that just that, just the fact that, because you and I have somewhat similar tastes in the game. I mean, relatively speaking,
I might be a little more. I tend to lean more for memes and stuff like that. You tend to look more like, hey, is this going to be really competitive and really good?
Yeah, I was going to say I might be a little more bloodthirsty, but other than that, yeah, for sure. So, but I don't know. I just think that kind of speaks to the strength of this set, because honestly, I've had this weird thing that I've had with this set where I started off being kind of excited. I'm always excited for new cards and a new set, but I wasn't super sold on the desert theme. And I mean, I like the League of Explorers, but I don't know, I wasn't totally sold on the theme and some of those early cards that we saw, with some exceptions, of course.
And we weren't too thrilled about the explorers in Saviors themselves when we saw what they did. Last episode, we were kind of lukewarm on them.
But now that doesn't matter at all, because one card that is, well, we'll talk about it. But anyway,
yes.
My point is, I have completely and totally come around on this. I think this is maybe the craziest set they've ever come out with. And I mean that in two ways. I mean, not only in power level, I think the power level is insane of some of this stuff. But past that, the general design that they've got going on here, I mean, other than, of course, the new mechanics and the choose one deal, they've gone in so many different directions. If you look at the neutrals that were announced the other day, they don't really fit like synergistically with a lot of different strategies, but yet they're so unique and interesting that you can just kind of picture a world in which a lot of these find their place somewhere, you know? So like, I don't know.
And I'd say that's partially due to just some of the new directions that certain classes are going in this set, on top of the reborn mechanic, on top of one thing I've kind of seen is they are fleshing out certain themes that I did not expect them to flesh out. I did not expect there to be talking about this really quickly. As an example, if you had told me there was going to be a zero cost spell that gave all totems plus two attack, I'd say one, that's broken; two, that's never going to happen. And it happened.
Right. No, yeah, and there's so many examples of that, and we'll get into quite a few of them here, actually, tonight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, we're going to go through this relatively in classes by alphabetical order. I rearranged it once I realized that it's a lot simpler for us. So we're going to start off with Druid, and of course, if you recall listening to us on a previous episode, I think even after looking at all the cards here, Kevin, there's definitely a winner in the Druid class.
Yeah, and it's very obvious. It's bees! Like, we definitely both agree that bees is the one we're most excited with. Maybe the whole set. I don't know. I don't know if I'll go that far.
It's pretty good. Kevin, you still have homework on the next episode or the one after to create the bees deck.
Oh, yeah.
I want to see that happen.
I believe it's a thing, especially now with all that like line cracker and stuff. But yeah, anyway, so that is the correct answer. But because we both just knew that that was a thing, and we've talked about bees quite a bit on the show, we both have chosen at least another Druid card, second place in our mind, that we're most excited for. So, Brian, what beyond bees is getting you here?
So, the one that I'm going for, and it's really because it's part of the whole package, but it's an example of what I think is going to be a really strong package, is Oasis Surger. It's a 5-mana, 3/3 with Rush, which has choose one, gain +2/+2, or summon a copy of this minion. Now, that means that it can either be a 5/5 rush for 5, which I think is pretty decent, or it can be 2/3/3 rushes for 5, which I think is pretty decent.
Yeah.
That alone is great, but keep in mind, there's this little thing in Saviors of Old Doom called quests, and the Druid quest allows both of your choose one effects to go off. And it's not that difficult a quest to complete. And in fact, all of these quests, whereas in the Journey to N'Goro, the quests were kind of a challenge to complete, these quests are designed so that you can, ideally, if you build your deck right, complete them around mid-game. So the Druid quest, if you end 4 turns with unspent mana, you get the new hero power. And then if you drop this thing on turn 5, you end up with 2 5 fives with Rush. That is freaking incredible.
That makes up for any tempo you lost getting that quest done, for sure.
Yes.
And this was one of the cards that was played by Chalky against Brian Kibler on the stream, if you caught this part. Oh, I actually only got to watch the first half, but that's okay. and I tell you, Brian, Brian Kibler did not win that game. Absolutely not. This was this, along with everything else that Chalky was doing with his Druid deck, which was kind of like, it was a token-y deck, but it wasn't fully, I mean, he wasn't putting out a bunch of small stuff and buffing it. He just,
and it had bees in it.
It had bees in it. It had, he did all the stuff with like, I mean, obviously he completed the quest pretty quickly and then just got a ton of value out of it. He was doing that spell, I'm blanking on the name, but the one that gives either like +2, plus whatever, and taunt, or the two raptors, and you know, you get both.
Oh, the blessing of the Loa, something
like that. Yeah. So, I mean, there's something to that deck, man. And this obviously is one of the cards, if not maybe like the card that gets it there, I think.
I think the Surger's the heavyweight that like brings, that makes that quest deck a threat. I feel like if you are able to play the deck right and go finish turn 4 into the hero power and then slam that down on turn 5, it's hard to recover from that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So for mine, I'm thinking like this time I obviously when I have my favorites in a set, I do tend to go toward power, like you were talking about, and what I think is going to be really good. But I make some exceptions. You know, if a card design is just that interesting, then sure. And for some reason, I am just kind of drawn to Overflow. So okay. Overflow is a 7-mana, restore 5 health to all characters, and then draw 5 cards. So, I mean, it reminds you of the UI days, of course. Obviously, it's not nearly as strong as something like that. Cheaper, for sure. I mean, 7-mana is what you're doing. You do give the 5 health, of course, to your opponent and anything on his board that's damaged. Mm-hmm. But then you draw the 5 cards. So I just don't know where this card's going as far as, like, if it's going to see much play or if it's going to be particularly good in any way. I mean, 7-mana, draw 5 cards seems like a weird sprint, you know? Like, super weird because of the health regen on this as well.
But I compare it more to a cheaper Unstable because about it, whereas you're not getting armor, but if you've, by turn 7, odds are you've taken 5 damage. So you're going to get that 5 back. You're going to get 5 cards. Basically, for 3 mana less, you're not putting a 5/5 on the board and you're not doing 5 damage to something. But the heal effect being global, I think, depending on your deck build, it could be huge. I think it's a great card.
You'd have to be not trying to rush your opponent down just because you'd be giving them the 5 health too. But I think there's something to it because you got to keep in mind, Druid's one of the hero classes. And by that, I mean, at least the Enlightened is a choose one. So, mm-hmm. I mean, not choose one, but the Highlander style, there can only be one. So, I mean, there's something there where, like, I could see having a full deck like that and bringing one copy of this to just have that extra like late game heal and draw effect and all that stuff. Maybe.
I definitely see the Elise Highlander deck running Overflow. And I also see it running the choose one that lets you get 5 health. And I could see running Lucent Bark in an Elise Highlander.
Yeah, I could see that too.
Because you got like the banker to copy Lucent Bark. You can play one of the Faceless Manipulators to copy Lucent Bark. You can do basically a modified Lucent Bark deck and make it work for Highlander.
Yeah. And this is quite a bit of healing to support that too.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's something there. I still need to get Lucent Bark though, man.
Mm. Yeah, it's one of those ones. It's a really niche legendary. It's one of those legendaries where I honestly, it's not one that I would right away tell people if you have 1600 dust, craft this card, at least not early on in the year. Like once we get the third set out and if it looks like Lucent Bark really has a lot going for it, then yeah, you might want to think about it. But as we will talk about near the end of the show, there are definitely some neutrals I would save that 1600 dust for.
Oh, yeah. No question there. So, okay, moving on to the next class then, Brian. Yeah. We're doing Hunter. Mm. What's tickling your fancy here?
So, for Hunter, the one... And with Hunter, while Bran is the most exciting Highlander legendary to me, the card that is getting my interest the most right now is Scarlet Webweaver. And that is a 6-mana, 5/5 with a battle cry, reduce the cost of a random beast in your hand by 5. I think that's freaking crazy because as we see in both this set and in some previous sets, especially in Rastakhan's Rumble, there are a lot of large beasts that can benefit from a 5-mana discount. And I think the slight loss of tempo by dropping just a 5/5 on 6 to be able to go into something, to just have a huge tempo play on turn 7 by dropping whether it's Undasta and something or King Crush and something else can be really huge.
Yeah. No, I'll agree with all that for sure. And I mean, you know, it's also, we just have Hyenas. I mean,
yeah.
Sorry, the Savannah High Main.
Yes. Always.
So, I mean, that, you can never go wrong there, you know?
Yeah, you play you, on turn 6. I mean, and also, I mean, if you play this on turn 7, you could end up going Scarlet Web Weaver and then right away into like Savannah High Main. So that's a pretty strong turn 7, if you ask me, to have a 5/5 and then a Savannah.
Seems good to me. You know what else works, Brian?
What else works?
turn 7 Scarlet Webweaver into Wild Bloodstinger, which is my choice. So it is kind of weird. Like, when I saw these announced, they were announced pretty close to each other. Like, I don't know the specifics of what sources they came out of and all that, but I remember looking again at Hearthshare Instagram and seeing these two beasts, same mana cost, same class, released at the same rough time. So I find that strange. And I also find it funny that you chose one and I chose the other.
Right.
The things we're most excited for. And obviously there is some synergy here. If we do the exact play that I just talked about, you'd almost have to hope that you hit the Wild Blood Stinger or whatever higher cost beast to get the best out of that. But whatever. The important thing here, though, is Wild Blood Stinger, 6 mana, 6/9 battle cry, summon a minion from your opponent's hand, attack it. So I have always loved cards that mess with your opponents in interesting ways. I'm on record as saying probably one of my favorite cards of all time is Dirty Rat. Being able to just pull something out, throw off your opponent's combo that they're building to, pull out their Shudderwalk when they're a Shudderwalk deck, and you know, there's just so many different things you can do with it. Alexstrasza, even though you got an 8/8 on the board now, you maybe you've saved yourself 15 health, right? So I mean, there's just
I'd say the worst Dirty Rat play that happened to me was when I completed the priest quest back in Un'Goro and my Amara got taken out with a Dirty Rat. I was playing it in wild and
that's through your whole plan. So no, it's cool. And I mean, this has the Dirty Rat effect. Summon a minion from your opponent's hand, attack it. I mean, we've also got some others. We got Hecklebot and a few others that are similar to this these days. But this is the straight pulling it from your opponent's hand. And I mean, 6/9 on 6, I gotta think 6 attack is fairly high, and 9 health is really fairly high. So, I mean, obviously it's not going to kill everything that you could pull out, but I mean, it's killing a pretty good chunk of stuff.
Yeah, I'd also say that if you have any kind of board, you play this first before you attack with anything, and even if you end up pulling out a 7/7 or 8/8 monstrosity of something, you should be able to follow up and finish it the same turn with something else on board.
Yeah, it makes sense. And that's a good tip. Do this first and then follow up with what you need. Because you never know. You could pull out something smaller and then the other little guys could just go face and be done. So
that's true. Yeah, it's a strong card. I'm going to say a really quick honorable mention, Kevin, to Hyena Alpha.
Yes.
4 mana, 3/3. If you control a secret, summon 2/2 hyenas. And it didn't click in my mind until I was watching Trump's video about it.
And he clicked.
Basically said, 4 mana, 7/7. That's freaking huge.
It just clicked for me as you were saying that.
Yeah.
I because I'm sitting here, when you evaluate these cards, when they've got multiple bodies, it is good to always add up the attacks and the health.
Yeah.
And then just think through like, oh, okay. Like even Barnes, you remember Barnes, we were always like, oh, you know, it's kind of like maybe a slightly stronger Yeti. And then it just broke the whole game. But the point is, yeah, doing that here, that is right. It is a 4 mana 7/7.
Yep.
The meme is alive.
Yeah, no drawback. I mean, you have to control a secret. Gee, I wonder if hunters are going to play secrets in Hearthstone, Kevin.
Yeah, I just don't know. With Subject 9 still in the meta? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
All right, let's move on to Mage. And Kevin, why don't you start us off first with your pick?
Okay, so Mage, I am going to go with actually what I find to be a really interesting card. And I want to go back through a little bit of Hearthstone history on this one. And that is, we're going to go with Ancient Mysteries. So this is something, again, that only came up fairly recently, I believe, the Brian Kibler stream. 2 mana, draw a secret from your deck. It costs 0.
Mm.
So, okay, obviously, just on a pure face value, really, you're playing a 3-mana secret for free once you do this.
Yep.
You're doing targeted draw. You could choose what secrets are in your deck, generally, of course, unless you're playing Arena or something.
Yeah.
And and then thus, like, you kind of know what you're going to get, you kind of have a plan. And I mean, here's the other thing too, Brian, like, historically we've had things like Mad Scientist, which probably up until this point, I would think would be the undisputed strongest way to get a secret out, in that it was just a 2 mana 2/2 that when it died, it just played your secret under the board. And that was incredible. That was a great way to, like, with a not so terrible body, get a huge extra effect, thin your deck out, do all the things that are just good to do in Hearthstone, and move on. Ancient Mysteries, I think, like, there's no body, so there's one downside, obviously, when compared to Mad Scientist. But it has something that Mad Scientist does not, and that is that it is a spell itself, and then you play the spell of the secret again, too. Mm-hmm. So I embarrassingly crafted Archmage Antonidas within this past expansion on this new account. Because I've never had him on this new account. I had him on my old one forever ago. But anyway, my point is, this is a great time to be running Archmage Antonidas. This is two spells that I'm getting two fireballs from. And, I mean, heaven knows what other spell synergies that mages have that I'm not thinking of off the top of my head.
Well,
there's probably several I can rattle off if I
need. Here's the thing that I want to bring up, and I'm glad that you're bringing up the spell synergy. But what I think is great about this card, if you think about some of the previous secret discounters we've had. We had that 2-1 lackey that for one mana, or not a lackey, but a 2-1, you played it, and then the spell, you could play a spell for free. We have Kirin Tor Mage, 3 mana, 4-3, play a spell for free. The big difference with this, and the reason why I think this is actually in some ways better, depending on your deck composition, is yes, you draw a secret, it costs 0. It doesn't cost 0 until end of turn. It costs 0. You don't have to play that secret right then. In fact, if there are certain secrets you're putting in your deck and you know that there's a certain time to play them and a certain time to hold on to them, it's good to just draw ahead of time, and then you get that extra synergy with things like, say, Vex Crow or other things that trigger off of spells being cast, or just another spell for a Cyclone Mage. There's just so much synergy here with this. It's kind of... It's a bit deceiving just how much you can do with this card.
It's a spell that comes from Cyclone Mage. It's a spell that comes from Magic Trick. It's like
my gosh, this comes from Magic Trick too. Yeah, that's sick.
It's so good. Like, I don't think you run a mage deck nowadays that doesn't have at least like counterspell and something else in the background. Because why not at least have the chance to get this going?
Yeah, it's funny because this is a common card, and that's another thing that I noticed too when I was picking a lot of these cards. Obviously, there's usually this pool to want to go for. Oh, every single legendary is freaking awesome, and there's definitely a few legendaries we're going to talk about. But I found myself going after a lot of common cards this time around.
Oh yeah, I genuinely struggle to decide in the neutral category. There are more strong neutral cards in this set than we've seen in some time.
Yeah,
I'm totally with you on that.
Yeah, for sure. So the one I picked for Mage is actually a rare card, which is still relatively easy to get. And this kind of, to continue our discussion here about spell synergy, Dune Sculptor, 3 mana, 3/3. After you cast a spell, add a random mage minion to your hand. So again, taking what I talked about before, turn 2, Ancient Mysteries, you draw your secret, you hold on to it for a turn. Turn 3, you drop Dune Sculptor, then you play your secret, and hey, you're already getting a mage minion back from that right on turn 3 before your opponent can do anything to stop you.
Yep, absolutely. And I mean, you know, this thing's going to rule the arena as well.
Because
arena play is always all about getting a little extra free stuff in your hand, extra value from everything you're doing. And yeah, this dude at the rare slot, I mean, who knows where it's going to be bucketed, but super good.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it could see competitive play too.
And I also have to say that because keep in mind we have in Druid, Hunter, Mage, Paladin, because these are the cards that have Highlander legendaries where you play one of a card in each deck, it really does feel like they've gone out of their way to create extra cards for each of those classes that provide additional value. Doom Sculptor is definitely a card that you would see in a standard Highlander Mage deck. I see no reason why you wouldn't run it.
Yeah, you just put, I mean, again, one of the weaknesses of those decks is that you don't double up on anything. Mm-hmm. Well, here's a chance to double up on something, potentially. You know, you get your second Arcane Flak Mage off there, right?
Yep.
And just chain your secrets from there. there really could be a Highlander Secret Mage.
Yeah, it's possible. And there's enough. I mean, we're not talking about all the secret cards, but there are 4 cards that are either secrets or dealing with secrets out of the 10 mage cards. So they are definitely making a secret push this expansion.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a clear direction for sure.
Yeah. All right. Paladin, Kevin, what do you have?
Indeed. So Paladin is one where, and I was even looking at the cards, Ryan, I'm just not that excited about Paladin this time around. I don't know. Maybe it's just
there me. Are a lot of people that agree with you, Kevin.
Okay. Well, that's good because I actually haven't heard that much because I haven't really dug into it.
Paladin but, just yeah. seems to be kind of meh.
Yeah. Yeah. It did at least have an extremely catchy song that Japanese like J-pop song
yes.
about the micro mummy. That's stuck in my head. By the way, if you haven't heard that song, you're not doing the reveal season properly. Yeah. You have to be going around with micro mummy stuck in your head.
Oh, man.
But anyway, no. So I guess my answer is going to be Sir Finley of the Sands. And we talked about him some last time. I've got all the same hangups that I once did, except I am generally more excited for Highlander decks now, which we'll get into. Yep. But yeah, he's the 2-mana, 2/3 battle cry. If your deck has no duplicates, discover an upgraded hero power. I mean, you don't have a way to control what hero power you're getting, so you don't really make a plan around it. But I mean, I don't know. The original Sir Finley worked similarly in that you could choose a hero power from another class. And it did seem in those days that if you were running a class that you weren't super fired up about the hero power in the first place, there was at least something decent to choose from. And I think that's going to be the case here too. Like, yes, there's going to be games where you get the three worst choices and you're just going to pick the least worst of those, I guess, for your matchup.
Never choose totems. Never choose the shaman upgraded hero power, please.
That's a fair bit. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, there would be ones that just totally throw off your plan. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're just trying to throw them out there and rush your opponent down, you don't want even the priest healing or the armor for the warrior. But, I mean, I don't know. I like the design. I think it's a good new take on Sir Finley, and I'm excited for it. If I craft this guy someday down the road, I'll be happy.
You know what would have fixed the shaman hero power upgraded? If they just made the totems +1/+1. Add a random totem, give it +1/+1.
Yeah, I'm on board with that.
Yeah. So I agree with your opinion on Paladin. I don't think it is that amazing a thing. I mean, you got a few kind of weird things going on. You've got the Reborn quest might be interesting. We'll see. I'm not a big fan of this whole one health theme that they have going on. All of that said, though, Kevin, there is one spell that I think is going to have an impact in Paladin, not just right now, but, you know, going all the way into the end of next year with whatever year that ends up being. And it's a really powerful card, I think, for Paladin. It's Subdue, it costs 2 mana, and it reads, set a minion's attack and health to 1. That is basically Hunter's Mark, but better. It's like polymorph, but you're not changing someone into a sheep. And if they have little extra things on them, they have it. But this is essentially a really strong pseudo removal card for Paladin that I think has been sorely needed for a while. Paladin missed on a lot of these cards, but Subdue is a grand slam for me.
No, yeah, I like it for sure. I almost wish it had a body attached, even a bad one. Mm. Like, 1/2 sets it to 1. But because then it would make me think of like some of the other cards that we've seen that set certain items to that. But no, yeah, totally. I could see a world in which, like, you know, as long as it doesn't have a death rattle, or even if it does have a good death rattle, the target that you hit with this, you just turn it to 1 and then just leave it.
Yep.
You know, I mean, let them deal with the death rattle and such, you know? So yeah, no, I'm with you on this one. I'd say of all the cards, that's maybe the most exciting.
Yeah.
At least that'll have the biggest long-term impact, kind of like you said.
Absolutely. As far as the other cards go, we'll see. I have a feeling that Paladin decks aren't going to be all the rage this time around. I'm hoping that some of the stuff we're seeing right now is just setting the stage for what's going to happen in the third set. This is kind of a wait-and-see set for Paladin. I think they're building the foundation, hopefully, for something, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the heck that is, because I really don't know what it is yet.
Yeah, for sure. I could see maybe next set making mummies being something seriously cool. But I don't know. We'll see.
All right. Well, I'm going to talk about the next one, and that is Impriest. And folks, you know how much I love Priest and Rogue in Hearthstone. So, of course, I'm going to talk about the legendary for priest because I have mentioned on this show before my love for the card that's called Soup Vendor.
That's right, yeah.
Soup Vendor is that 1/4 that when you heal 3 to yourself, you get to draw a card. Well, Soup Vendor might not be the card you think of when you think the priest quest, but it's one of the cards I sure thought of right at the beginning. So the legendary quest for priest is activate the obelisk, 1 mana, and the quest reads restore 15 health. That seems like that's a lot of health to restore, and how are you going to restore that health in the game so easily? Well, I will say that there are a lot of supporting cards, both in priest and in neutral minions, that are going to allow you to heal a lot of health really quickly. They've definitely given you the tools to make restoring 15 health pretty easy. The reward, the hero power reward, allows you to heal for 3 instead of 2. And if it's a minion you target, it also gets +3/+3. So if you have a damaged minion and you heal it for 3, it's also going to get +3/+3, so you've basically given it 6 health and 3 attack. Yeah. That's this is bananas. I feel like, and there are a lot of people that are raving about this card, and then there's the other camp saying that, no, it's too slow, it's not going to work. This is the exciting time where everyone has dreams. They want to make their dreams real. I really want to play an aggressive, a healing type priest where you're playing damage minions, you're running wild pyromancer, you've got, you know, your Northshire cleric. The cool thing about this quest, Kevin, is it's one of those quests where you don't feel like you have to play it on turn 1. If you have Northshire in your opening hand, you play Northshire, and you can play this right before you play whatever your first heal is going to be.
Yeah, you can save it really until that first heal, honestly. You know, I mean, you don't need it until then, technically. I mean, obviously, it can be a smart turn 1 play regardless, and you start the game with it all the time, which is smart. But
if you have Northshire turn 1, you always go full Northshire.
Oh, of course. Of course. This, when we saw it on the stream with Brian Kibler again, it just looked really strong. Mm-hmm. And I mean, worst case scenario, they even mentioned it on stream. I mean, you can heal your own face with the hero power still. And it still gives you an extra point of health.
And so, if you have Soup Vendor out, the new hero power means restore 3 health, draw a card.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And buff the Soup Vendor through and the roof. Buff,
well, no, if you target yourself, then you get the card from Soup Vendor. Vendor
has to be face
Soup
heal.
Vendor triggers from face heals for 3. If Soup Vendor gave you card drawing from healing anything for 3, that card would have to be banned right away.
Good point. Okay. Well, you could still target the Soup Vendor, and I've got to think there's times in which that's the best
play. Oh, to protect the Soup Vendor? Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, turn it from 1/4 into a 4/7 to have it go face? Sure. Have it serve Soup Vendor beatdown. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. It's going to pour that soup all over your opponent's face.
No soup for you? Here, take all the soup.
That's right. We have just laid out for you guys the meta of the next like 3 months.
I think, Kevin, you're probably doing the Bees Dex Neck episode, and I'm probably going to do Soup Vendor 2.0. It won't be a rogue Soup Vendor deck. It's going to be a priest Soup Vendor deck. Get ready for it. It's coming.
I feel like you're going to try Soup Vendor every set, no matter
every what, time until time. As long as it's in standard, I will keep that dream alive.
Absolutely. Okay, so for me and Priest, there's really good stuff in Priest across the board. The one I chose actually is just a support of yours in a way, but I also just find it really interesting in terms of like card design, because we've seen again, Frostbolt is a 2-mana 3 damage anywhere, and then also, of course, freezes the target, which makes it super strong against anything. We've seen other like 2-mana bombs in the past, like Dark Bomb. There's the Warlock one that just 2-mana deal 3 damage, seems good, does its thing. And then the Priest, now we see one, Penance. So it is a little different, of course. It is 2-mana deal 3 damage to a minion, but also has lifesteal, like you would if you were a disciplined priest doing damage and healing at the same time. So I find it to be like an interesting new take in this space, I think everyone has played with 2-mana deal 3 damage spells enough to know that they are just generally good.
Yeah.
And yeah, you can't aim it to face, which is whatever, but I mean, you're getting the healing that you need to work up toward activate the obelisk. You're just getting extra healing across the board, living longer, doing priesty things.
Scales with spell damage. Card.
Yeah, right. So I like it.
Yeah.
Penance.
My only question is, why couldn't this have been the classic set replacement for Mind Blast?
Yeah, that's good. This definitely could have been.
This would be a very acceptable replacement for Mind Blast. I don't think Penance is OP, and I think Penance is about the power level that you'd want for classic. Maybe a little on the high side, but not super broken like Mind Blast was. Yeah. But yeah,
and it's on brand with you know, everything else.
Yeah. I think Penance will definitely be something that we see people use as far as like a finisher and such like that. If spell damage priest ever becomes a genuine thing, this will be part of it.
Yeah.
We'll see. Maybe that's another thing I'll try. I gotta say, just overall, I'm really excited for Priest. Like, Priest has many different things that can do, not just with the quest, but there's other crazy directions that you can go with Priest with some of these cards. I'm going to mention a Priest card later on as one of my honorable mentions. It's just crazy.
I saw that. And when we get to that, I will say there's a reason I didn't choose that card as my favorite, because I am not excited about it, Brian.
Oh, I know you're not. I can imagine. All right. Kevin, let's move on to Rogue. And I will say the reason why I chose my card is because I knew you were going to choose the card you chose.
It's just because I walked through the valley. I don't know what to tell you. this card is just nuts. Yeah, and yeah, the reason you knew I was going to pick it is because it is super crazy, insane strong. Like, I don't know, game-breaking. It's probably going to destroy wild. I don't know. It's going to be nuts.
I will say this before you even describe the rogue card. Everyone, I'd like you to bow your heads and have a moment in silence in advance. Mm-hmm. For one Leroy Jenkins, who I guarantee by the end of this year is going to the Hall of Fame. And this card might be why.
Well, this card or the Warrior card that we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Yes. No, it has to, man. This set, he should not have been a part with this set. Anyway, I digress.
Leroy Jenkins may be the arch villain of Saviors of Old Doom.
Maybe they'll rotate him this set. Everyone play him. Everyone do these decks and do really well with them. Give him the data to support that. Anyway, I digress.
Yep.
Shadow of Death. 4-mana, choose a minion, shuffle 3 quote-unquote shadows into your deck that summon a copy when drawn. And so this is anything. It says choose a minion as well. So it's not even necessarily the minion on your board. It could be your opponent's minion.
Yep.
It could be, obviously, something there on your side. And naturally, you are wanting to pick a deck that works with this. But, you know, I'm just seeing, like, it's one of those very much like the Warrior card that we're going to talk about. In that, really, the applications are endless. Like, I don't even really want to sit and think about every single situation that this would be awesome.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in Wild, you got Ragnaros. You've got... just, I don't know. You could do crazy Hadronox things. No, not really. That's a druid card, but I digress. The point is, you could do some stuff here, and I'm super pumped for it because it really is very much like a lot of the rogue cards that we've seen, just much stronger. And I mean, 4-mana spell is a drawback for sure. And though it's been nerfed, you can still prep it out. Still get out at 2. So there's definitely something here. Play some crazy 8-drop, prep this. And then just draw the rest of your deck, I guess. There's Myra Unstable Element if you want to help with that. So
there's a legendary thing with Death Rattle that lets you draw 8 cards.
yes, absolutely there is. Which neither of us have in any of these notes here.
But no, still because I think it's terrible.
I do too, yep. I do too. It's funny, kind of.
Yes.
I
mean, I'm glad, as a lot of content creators have said, I will agree with this. I'm glad it exists. And we're talking, I'm going off the rails here, but Octosari, 8-mana, 8/8, Death Rattle, draw 8 cards. I'm glad that card exists because Trolden's going to have a blast with it when all crazy bad things happen to evolves and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. You know what else it might be really good in? Single player content.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could see that.
But anyway, Shadow of Death is going to be sick.
Yeah, super good. So how about you, Brian?
And yeah, if you people didn't realize, Shadow of Death Leroy Jenkins is my resident stable element. Hi, I win the game.
Yeah, pretty much. If you don't overdraw and burn those.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah.
So my card is Bazaar Mugger. It's a 5-mana, 3/5 with rush, battle cry, add a random minion from another class to your hand. And this is not the most broken card in the world. It, not all of my picks are, oh my gosh, this is going to be the craziest thing in Hearthstone. I like this card because it's a good body. It's a 3/5. It's rush. It has initiative. It lets you get things done when you play it. And it's giving you value. I mean, Rogue's been about value before, and it's about value now, even before Saviors of Old Doom launches. But this is just another strong value card. It's often when you play it, it's going to be removal. You're going to keep a body on the board, and you're going to have a random body from another class in your hand. There's no downside to this card. I think it's undercosted. I would play this card at 6. I'm surprised it's 5, and I'm going to run it in a Burgle deck, in the Thief deck.
Yeah, more than that, it's working toward Bazaar Burglary, the quest.
Yep.
It's activating your Vendettas, which you definitely have in that deck.
Yeah.
It's really good. I'm totally with you on that one. I feel like if it did either of those things, it would be what I'd expect out of some boring neutral.
Yeah.
But both combined, not boring at all. I'm with you.
Yeah, it's super strong, and need I say, turn 4 Spirit of the Shark, turn 5 this, if you really want to be nuts.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Again, it's just a solid Rogue card. I mean, there are other cards here in Rogue that I'm excited about. I'm obviously super excited about the Legendary, but Bazaar Mugger, I just like it because I see myself running Bazaar Mugger in a lot of different Rogue decks.
Yeah, I mean, worst case scenario, you get a good rushing body out with a card.
Yeah.
That's just all. There's never a time in which that is not good.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. I like it. All right. Let's move on to Shaman, Kevin.
Shaman is another one that I've not so sure about as far as like one of my class favorites for this set. But I will say there's some stuff in here. I mean, by all means. Let me see here. So we are going to go with Plague of Murlocs. So, wasn't quite so sure about this card when I first saw it, and it's one of those that, like, you have to think through it a little bit to think about how good this is going to be or how bad. Mm-hmm. It is just a 3-mana, transform all minions into random Murlocs, which, obviously, it's a double-sided board clear, but it's weird, Brian. It's not a double-sided board clear. It is a double-sided board polymorph.
Yeah.
You are removing any death rattles or any other synergies or buffs or anything like that on your opponent. And yes, you're doing it on your own too. Sure. I could see some downsides to that. But I mean, Brian, in a class where you can just be playing like totems and stuff, say I got 2 totems out and my opponent has a 4-drop, a 5-drop, and I don't know, Tyrion Forgering or something on the board, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I play this, I don't really care that he's got 3 Murlocs and I've got 2. I got value in that I polymorphed his whole board, essentially. I may have a few 2 Murlocs to his 3, but I have come out on top, frankly. I've turned those totems into something better than what they were and severely, like, hindered him. It's a lot like Devolve in its own way and Evolve in its own weird way, or of course, you could devolve the heck out of your own board and take a position of strength and then nerf yourself with a bunch of Murlocs. But I don't know, in this way, it's that push and pull that I'm describing there that I think just makes it really interesting. And I think it's definitely going to see some play.
Yeah, it's especially going to see. Now, one thing that we're not going to talk about, I think, a whole lot here, but there was a little bit of news as far as like in Grandmasters, they're not going to be doing the specialist format. But in Masters and like regular competitive play, the specialist format's going to still continue. I see people running this in a specialist format as part of their secondary or third deck against Giants Mage, against, you know, Summoner Mage. It's a way to get rid of the golems and the 8 and the giants that end up coming out. This is definitely an answer to any deck which is trying to put out big stuff out quickly.
And we need an answer to that mage deck because it just got so much better.
Mm.
So much better. I don't even want to get into it, but it's going to be one of the craziest decks ever. And yeah, anyway, what were we talking about? Shaman. Yeah. What's your shaman pick?
So my shaman pick is the shaman legendary minion, and it's Vecina from the Dalaran Heist. Interesting that we're seeing a couple of the Dalaran Heist characters become legendaries, both with her and Takan. Makes me wonder if we're going to see George in the third set or the Pandaren Warrior in the third set. That will be interesting to see.
Oh, I would love that. Yeah, for sure.
But Vecina, 4 mana, 2/6, so fairly decent on the cost and such. It reads, while you're overloaded, your other minions have +2 attack. There's no longer a reason to play Bloodlust and Shaman, because most Shaman decks that are going the whole Bloodlust route often are running some cheap overload cards in their deck as well. There are a couple of zero cost cards with overload that are there to be considered. So if you think about that, every overload card in your deck now reads, when Vecina's in play, your minions have +2 attack. All of your overload cards have turned into slightly less powerful Bloodlust in addition to doing what they already do. I think that's freaking crazy. I think if you're playing a shaman deck that's going to build a wide board, whether it's totems, murlocs, whatever, you have a few cheap overload spells. If you don't play them in the early game and you don't get value out of them, then they're still going to be valuable to you in the mid to late game once you drop Vecina and then play one of those spells right after it, and you got a mini Bloodlust going on. It is a really solid legendary. It doesn't seem like she does a heck of a lot. When it's one of those cards where, like, you read the text and it's like, that's okay, I guess. And you think overload and you think bad things. But honestly, when you think about some of those cheap overload cards and you think about what Shaman does best, there's no longer a reason, as long as Vecina is in standard, there's no reason to run Bloodlust because she does what Bloodlust does so much better.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, she's just good, too. The weird thing is that, like, obviously the first deck that you think of is the Overload Shaman that's already really popular and super strong. Like, does she slot in there? And my answer is, yeah. I mean, the interesting thing about her design is that she gives you all this attack, but yet there's a cost in that her body doesn't really follow that plan. I mean, it's a 2/6, which is kind of hard to kill when you drop it on 4, and just in general.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you get that. But, I mean, you just get to choose when you put out this 4 drop. Like, you could save it for late in the game when you've got a decent board and use the Bloodlust. Or, I mean, you could throw it out, get even just a little bit of an extra attack out of just some little guys, and you're talking. I mean, we're talking, this is a world in which we've got Thunderhead, which just got buffed. We've got things like, I mean, we're still rocking the Lick'em and every single thing else.
The overload spell that generates sparks.
Yeah. And those sparks come out with extra attack.
Yes.
And they're like rushing for the most part. But, you know, there's definitely something here. I'm really excited for Vecina too.
Yeah. And I will say just a quick shout out to Totemic Surge, as I mentioned earlier at the top of the show. 0 mana, give your totems +2 attack. Not going to do anything in standard, but you better believe I'm building a totem deck for Wild, Kevin.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Get that, I don't remember the name of it, but the taunt that reduces cost with every totem you've played.
Yeah.
Yeah, do a couple of those. Those were good. I like those.
Yep. All right. Well, we're going to move on to Warlock here. Just 2 classes left in the neutrals. And I'm going to start off with what I think is the strongest non-lackey related Warlock card in the set. And that is Diseased Vulture. 4 mana, 3/5 beast. So again, 4 mana and a pretty solid body. It reads, after your hero takes damage on your turn, summon a random 3-cost minion. When you consider that the average stats for a 3-cost minion are somewhere in the neighborhood of 3-2 to 3-3, given just all the different 3-cost minions we have, and I'm just, wow. There are a lot of cheap ways to deal damage to yourself. Turn 5, you could drop the Vulture and play a Crystallizer. You could drop the Vulture and play a Flame Imp. this is definitely one of those cards where I feel like I would play it in a turn where I can immediately follow it up with a way to take damage. So yeah. The most obvious, of course, is turn six. You can play it and life tap, and you get a random three-cost minion in addition to drawing a card for two mana. That's pretty sick.
It is, but that example exactly is why I've got reservations about this, because it just reminds me too much of Inspire.
Mm.
I mean, yeah, you could do cheaper ones. You could do the five mana, you know, Disease Vulture into Flame Imp, like you kind of described. But yeah, that's my only reservation, is that I'm with you. Even though the body's good, 4 mana, 3/5, that's good on 4. I just don't know many games where I would just drop this on 4 and then hope to do more the next turn. Because if there is one thing I do like about this card, is that it's one of the ones that I talk about as having a soft taunt.
And yeah.
Like, this dude's got to go. Absolutely.
Yeah, it must be stopped.
Time, you know? Mm-hmm. Are there a lot of 4/2, 3-costs minions in the meta right now?
Not yet, but there's going to be more.
Well, if it becomes a thing, 4 mana, 7/7. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. That's how you got to think of these things, folks. Anyway, so my choice for this one is going to be... Actually, it is one that I'm... Of the legendaries... Other than one major exception that we're going to talk about, this one is the one I'm most excited for. Dark Pharaoh Tekkan, again, coming from our single player.
Yep.
And Battle Cry is 5 mana, 4/4, which, whatever. Battle Cry, for the rest of your game, your lackeys are 4/4. So, obviously, this is reminding you of the old Rogue Quest.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, it's much easier to finish than the Rogue Quest, and that all you have to do is draw and drop this guy. The drawback, of course, is that it's only buffing lackeys, but Brian, lackeys are all really good, and they all have really, even like the new one is just good. So I don't know. I think there's something here. I agree with you. They've got even more like lackey support coming in this particular set, including like Evil Recruiter, super cool. I don't know. So there's definitely a lackey warlock deck. And it is one that I kind of want to take up right away. And I love that, like, of all the evil classes, the one that got the most support was Rafam's. I don't know. There's something about that in the story that we're unfolding here that I like.
I'm a little sad that Priest and Rogue, my favorite classes, did not get any lackey support this time around.
That's true, yeah.
By the way, since we're talking about lackeys right now, I guess now's a perfect time to ask a question. One... What do you think of only one new lackey? And two, do you think lackeys are getting out of control right now, given what we now know?
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, the one that they are doing is just, I mean, I think it's just in line with the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
A different take, really, with the defensive option. But I think the design of the new one is good. Yeah, I guess I would have liked another one. Maybe it had to have come down to testing. I feel like there had to have been more in this set.
Yeah.
And then maybe a lot more next set, too, to kind of keep with the theme. And maybe, yeah, they just either couldn't find things that were of a similar power level. They clearly did not make the choice that we thought they might in nerfing
for some reason,
lackey pool.
Yeah, for some reason, I thought that we were going to see, like, multiple lackeys. When they only decided to add one new one, my initial thought was mild disappointment, but then I was like, well... On the bright side, that means the lackeys that I'm used to enjoying are still going to show up fairly often.
Yeah, because, I mean, the fear, or, of course, some people were hoping for this, was that they would release multiple lackeys, but that they wouldn't be so hot. Like, they might do something okay, but, you know, I mean, not compared to the other ones, and thus it would weaken the pool overall. But they've not done that, at least, so.
Man, what if you had a lackey that was just terrible? It's like you have a lackey that says 1 mana while it's in your hand, take 2 damage.
Yeah, there you go. Dude, they could. I mean, and look, fill it in with the story, you know, the third set that League of Evil is starting to finally falter and their lackeys are becoming unstable.
Oh man, we're giving them ideas, Kevin. These are bad ideas.
No, but some would argue that for the meta, that's a good idea.
Right.
That we get that the lackeys are too strong and that we need one that does something stupid like that. I would kind of secretly love that. I don't know.
All right. Well, that takes care of Warlock. Kevin, We've already talked about one crazy card, and surprise, surprise, your pick for Warrior also happens to be mine, so why don't you talk about it?
Yeah, yeah. This one might be the this one might be the most problematic card in the whole set. Or game, I don't know, I can't decide. But I will say that it being a rare as it is, or sorry, an epic card, hang on to this one, because if there's something that Blizzard's going to nerf for Hall of Fame and you're going to get the full value back for, don't dust this guy, because I feel like it's going to be around a bit. So Bloodsworn Mercenary, and we both agree on this one, because it is a 3-mana 3/3 battlecry, choose a damaged friendly minion, summon a copy of it. So sounds good, right, Brian? I mean, yeah, the Warriors do these things. They whirlwind their own board and get extra copies of things, and that's
good thing Warrior doesn't have any
stuff is their thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing Warrior doesn't have any zero cost spells that damage things.
Yeah, that would be weird. And what if, Brian, that spell not only damaged your minion but also gave it extra attack?
Oh, that'd be broken with this card, Kevin.
Like, is there a world in which you could, based on something that I saw on Hearthshare, have 2/11/5 angry chickens and this card out on turn 3? Is that something that could happen?
It's definitely something.
Could you play, like, could you have like a turn 8 where like Leroy Jenkins comes out, right? Mm-hmm. And then you buff him to be an 8/1, and then you copy that, and then you have 16 points of burst damage from hand, which with a set of cards that really isn't that hard to get.
Yeah.
Is that a thing that could happen?
It's a thing that could happen.
Or anything else, like, you know, multiple Ragnaroses in Wild, or, I mean, whatever. You know, it's one of those, again, like we talked about this earlier with the other card.
Yeah.
There's so many applications to this that we can't really sit down and like think through every single one. But some of these ones that have been come up with, even just the Leroy example is enough for me to be like, what is really going on here? So,
I mean, if you think about it, so at a minimum, this thing would summon a 1/1 in addition to it when it comes into play. So like if you damage a 1/2 minion and you really want a copy of that 1/2 minion, then you're getting at the absolute worst minimum 4/4 stats for 3 mana, which is pretty freaking good in Hearthstone, period. Usually when you get a 4/4 for 3, there's a drawback attached to it. And again, that is the worst case scenario for this guy. More often than not.
Well, the worst case is you just play it.
Right.
But I mean, even then, it's a 3-mana 3/3. Like,
yeah,
it's not the worst thing you could do with your life.
Right. And the thing is, there are going to be situations where this is going to be, I mean, we talk 4-mana 7/7. This is going to be 3-mana insane. When you think about
infinite.
Yeah, it's just some of the value here. It's pretty sick. This is one of those cards where, I mean, we're going to see how the set plays out and how the meta plays out. But this is one of those cards when I first took a look at it, I'm like, how does this not get nerfed? I have a feeling, like, my prediction for a nerf for this is that it becomes like a 4-mana 3/2. And even then, that might not be enough.
Yeah. No, I don't think it will be. Because of, is it Inner Rage? I've been blanking. I think it's Inner Rage. Yeah, because of Inner Rage, frankly.
Yeah.
That is, again, the zero cost. Deal 1 damage to a minion and give it +2 attack. It's the ultimate card to pair this with.
Mm-hmm.
Not only because it's free, but it does exactly 1 damage. If Inner Rage even did, like, deal 2 damage to a minion and give it +2 attack, then we're at least, like, thinking about, okay.
But then it's great removal. That's a problem with Inner Rage. It's so hard to balance, because if you make it 2 damage for 0 mana, oh my gosh.
So I think instead of balancing it, we should just delete it from the game.
So the answer is to retire Inner Rage to the Hall of Fame.
No.
Can we retire Charge to the Hall of Fame while we're at it, please?
Yeah, just for consistency's sake. Yeah, we can delete that, too. That's
fine. Oh, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay, this card's going to be stupid good. It's not. I don't know if you run it in the Control Warrior deck, but this deck is going to be a key part of its own monstrosity.
I think you do, though. I mean, they run like big mechs and stuff. Even if you just play a decently sized mech. Say you get, I don't know, like Mechathune off of the hero power from
Dr. Bill.
And then someone hits into it and you got a 10-2. Whatever, you play this guy and you got two 10-2s, you know? Like, I don't know. It's going to be just so good.
It's weird. This is one of those cards that's so good, I'm actually worried about it.
Oh, no. Yeah.
This is kind of like Carnivorous Cube good.
I think it's, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I want to say it's, no, yeah. It's scarier
than Carnivorous pretty much Cube Carnivorous Cube good, in my opinion.
It may be better. Yeah.
All right. Well, that wraps up the classes. I knew this was going to be a long show. This is why we didn't do all the other stuff at the top of the show. So
yep.
let's get on into neutrals. And we're each going to talk about two neutrals of our own. And then we're going to save a few minutes for what I think Kevin and I think is just one of the best cards in Hearthstone, period. So my first pick for top two neutrals is a legendary. It is Siamat, 7 mana, 6/6. And when it comes into play, you get to choose two of the following, Lifesteal, Rush, Wind Fury, or Taunt. And of course, I should mention that this was part of, once again, an incredible reveal video from LP Amazing or Amazing LP. The real life Hearthstone videos, just they one up themselves each time. This one was especially good.
It was so good. And they gave him 2-card reveals.
Yeah.
Just go watch it. I will say this. I was looking forward to that video this entire reveal season. Like, I was just waiting for it. And how I learned about it, Brian, was you hopped in our Discord channel where we planned for this show,
yep.
And you linked it. And all you said was, it's time.
It's time. Strap in. Get some popcorn.
I still was not prepared for that. So yeah, super good. As always.
Oh, yeah. It was really good. Anyhow, so CMAT, 6/6, 7 mana, being able to give it 2 of 4 decent things. What I see myself often doing with this is dropping it as a 6/6 with Divine Shield and Rush. There was a card back in the olden days of Hearthstone when Return to Karazhan, or not Return to Karazhan, One Night in Karazhan was a thing, and Mage had a card called Firelands Portal, which for 7 mana did 5 damage and summoned a 5-cost minion. Or something like that. At any rate, this, as a neutral, any class can play it. For 7 mana, in what I think is its best form, you essentially deal 6 damage to a minion and have a 6/6 body left on the board. That's a pretty strong thing. I don't think this is Ziliak's good. I think it's just a hair below it, because I can see some cards saying, hey, this is a good card, but maybe at 7 mana, this isn't something I want to have bogged down my deck. Like the Zoo decks and the aggro decks, I don't know if they run this, but I see there are a lot of decks that I see why not run this thing. It's a solid good legendary.
Actually, I hadn't thought about the comparison to Ziliak's, but that is very, very astute, because, yeah, you're right. That combo is a lot like him in that, yes, you get the Rush and Divine Shield. I mean, obviously, it doesn't, you know, magnetize, doesn't have the heal on it. But, I mean,
the body is great.
Mana cost per attack is better. Yeah, the body is way better. In fact, it's like, you know, because if you just play Ziliak's and just run him in, which often is a great play, I mean, you're paying 5 mana for 3 attack. This is 7 mana for 6, which is not as big of a drop there. So, I mean, yeah, this was the card, Brian, when I looked at the overall set. When I saw this announced, I was like, okay, now I need every card in this set. This was the turning point for me. And then after that, with the final reveal, it just drove that point home. But yeah, no, I'm super excited for Siamat too. There is the other application, the one that they discussed on stream too, the Divine Shield Wind Fury, just in that, like, you're putting out something that's so threatening that if you've set up your board in the right way where you're pretty sure it's going to make it through it, you've just done 12 damage next turn, you know? So, like, I love the flexibility.
Yeah, it's kind of a pseudo, it's not a instant Alakir, but it's similar to Alakir in power level, I would say, for sure.
Yeah, actually.
All right, so that was one of the big neutral legendaries. We're going to end up talking about three of the neutral legendaries because we've already talked about the fourth one, which is trash and garbage. Hi, Octosari. Kevin, what is the other legendary that you are hyped about?
Well, it's King Feoris. So this is the 10-mana 5-5. Doesn't sound great. Battle cry for each spell in your hand. Summon a random minion of the same cost. So I want to point out one thing before I really get into talking about that, and it's just simply that we've been hinting off and on about that Cyclone Mage or whatever you want to call it mage that copies a bunch of stuff. This is a nerf to that because when you're breaking apart those giants, this is one of the things that can come out. I'll say I wish it had a worse body, honestly, because even at 5-5, if I played my spell there, and what was it called again? Why am I blanking on this? It's one of my favorite spells ever. The twin spell that splits up your
Conjurer's minion. Calling?
Yeah. So if I Conjurer's Calling a giant and I get two King Feoris's and Colossus of the Moon, I'm still a happy guy, right? Mm-hmm. So that's beside the point. But past that, it's a neutral legendary. Battlecry seems super strong. You obviously would prefer it in a deck that you have a pretty full hand and with pretty big spells. But I would argue, this is someone that you could just drop anytime. I mean, if I put down a 5-5 and then also filled my board with things like a 2-drop, a 4-drop, a 5, and a 6, cool. Like, I've just maybe swung back in a game, right? So I like him a lot.
Yeah, I definitely see some shenanigans and big spell mage for this. I also am curious to see if there's some kind of tricky gimmick meme decks that try to, in maybe more so in Wild, that try to cheat him out early. Can you imagine doing something like the Geppetto Joy Buzz, like using him in a Geppetto deck or something? I don't know. I feel like there's some crazy things to this that we haven't even thought about. Obviously,
Geppetto,
it's going to
like a big spell deck of some kind.
That's the thing. Huh. I mean, you see a card like this and your mind kind of automatically thinks mage deck, but no, this can work in any class.
Yeah, absolutely. Geppetto could pull him and Reno in a Highlander style deck.
Mm-hmm.
Or the other Highlander card we're about to talk about.
Are we going to call them Reno decks anymore, I wonder?
Yeah, I don't know. I've been saying Highlander because I just like the there can only be one joke.
Yes.
But yeah, definitely not, I'd say.
All right. Well, the other card I want to talk about, and it's interesting because Kevin had made a callback when he was talking earlier about the Hunter Beast that basically forces a card out of your hand. Is you with the Wild Bloodstinger, you mentioned you like disrupting your opponent's strategy combos and all that stuff. And it's partially for that reason and partially because I like Rogue, that this neutral minion, Mischief Maker, is definitely a favorite of mine. So Mischief Maker is kind of an unassuming card, a 3-mana, 3/3, so not the worst body in the world. Battlecry, swap the top card of your deck with your opponent's. If your opponent's running any sort of like combo strategy and you end up getting their combo piece, GG. If you are playing a rogue thief deck that likes cards from other classes, this has a good chance of getting a card from another class. I'm a fan of this. It lives up to its name. And again, this is one of those cards where I can't wait to see this in trolling videos where you just see Mischief Maker cause some really crazy things to happen. And just when the opponent thinks that everything's under control, nope.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No, I'm excited for it. I mean, I like any card, of course, that messes with your opponent in weird ways, as I said just now. I have a love-hate relationship with this in that, I mean, you're really just swapping the top card, and it's out of their deck and not out of their hand.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, you could totally throw them off. Of course, you could give them something amazing. You'd almost want to like run this in a deck where you're not running things that are just earth-shatteringly amazing. Like you would not want to play this in a warrior that's doing Dr. Boom Mad Genius, because you don't want to give them that. So I don't know. It's definitely interesting. I think it's definitely going to find its way into something, but I'm not sure what. But my choice is going to be one that is at least good no matter what, if not potentially pretty dang good, and that's mm-hmm. History Buff.
Yeah.
We both chose, actually, Epic Neutrals, but this one, 3 mana, 3/4, which again, Spider Tank, just, yep. Yeah, just play that. Sounds good. But it is a persistent effect. Whenever you play a minion, give a random minion in your hand, +1/+1. And I'm on record in saying I don't really love hand buffing as like an overall thing. But this guy is, you just plop him out on 3. You could save it a little bit, just like any of these others, and get a couple other minions out to get the buffs rolling if you really wanted to. But honestly, this is another one of those soft taunts. This guy's got to die. I don't care. He's going down. +1/+1 doesn't seem super strong, especially to a random minion. But at the same time, I'll remind you of how good, like, Captured Flag, in single player.
Yeah.
And that, like, if you just have that tiny little edge, you'd start snowballing early, and then you just get there. And I would think this guy would go in a deck that somehow does that with small minions.
Murloc Shaman, maybe,
like,
man.
Lackeys or Murloc Shaman.
Murloc Shaman, yeah. Would love this card.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think he finds his way in somewhere, too.
Yeah, I definitely see. Is he a good fit for Zoo?
Ooh, I don't know. Yeah, maybe. I mean, with lackeys, yes. It's like a lackey Zoo and you're doing the new legendary Tekkon and stuff, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that takes care of all of the neutrals except for one. And we have definitely saved the best for last. It's funny because in the show notes, I kind of say there are two things I had in there. One is what we're about to talk about. And the other one was a question, which card will have the most impact on the game?
The
answer may be the same. So yep. At the end of that amazing LP video, which had Siamat in it, one of the things about that video is Siamat's beating up the heroes, and then Anduin's all beaten, bruised, and all that stuff, and he gets up, he calls out to the light, just kind of reminiscing, kind of like that pole bell for Azeroth thing, and everyone gets back up, and the light turns into a Hearthstone card, and the Hearthstone card turns into a lamp, and Anduin just goes, wow. And everyone wondered, what does it mean?
Well, I did too. And honestly, I didn't make that connection until you just said this. But yeah,
we found out
that lamp now.
Yeah, we found out what it meant at the reveal. Kevin, I will let you have the honors.
Okay, so if you haven't seen it yet, I mean, I guess just buckle up. I don't know what to tell you. he lives up to his title for sure.
Yeah.
I genuinely think it's the greatest card in the history of the game. I think it...
Better than Reno Jackson.
It breaks the entire genre of games. I didn't think that this kind of technology could be a thing, and it is. Like, I had a really great time earlier today, Brian. I'm in a just chat with some of my Zord buddies here, mm-hmm. the local like gaming people that I hang out with. And I posted it in our chat, and I was like, I just wanted to expose you guys to the greatest card design of all time in Hearthstone and the entire genre. And they were just like, what? And then I explained it and they were just like, oh, that sounds a little OP. And indeed it does. So we're talking about Zephyrus the Great, who again, completely lives up to his name. And here's the idea. I don't want to cover every single little nuance. There's some resources out here. Out of.cards has a great article that breaks down mm-hmm. every single thing that this guy takes into consideration. But here you go. 2 mana, 3/2, which, even just right there, Brian, if that's all he did, that's a
solid minion
for 2.
Yeah.
It's a raptor. Yeah. It's the biggest possible power creep over raptor imagined.
indeed.
This is great. Okay. Zephyrus the Great, battle cry. If your deck has no duplicates, wish for the perfect card. And if you listen to the show, you probably have maybe even looked this up already, but let's get into a little bit about what that wish does, Brian. You want to kick us off here? I've been rambling for a bit.
Yeah, so basically the Hearthstone dev team spent a heck of a lot of time just designing this one card. And the kind of story behind it is
they say more time than like the rest of them? Close? Like it took a ton of time to make this card.
Right, and they wanted to design a card that at first they were thinking about, like, what if we made a card that allowed you to go through your collection and choose any card in your collection and do that. And the tech people were like, please don't. And after several iterations, they came down to this. So basically, the AI, when you play Zephyrus, the AI takes in a lot of things into account. What the classes are, how much leftover mana you have, how much mana you're going to have next turn, the board state, your hand size, the health of heroes, all that stuff. And Zephyrus will offer you three cards. They don't have to be from your class. They can be from any class. They can be neutral. It's coming from the basic or classic cards, so you won't see anything from expansions, which I almost think is actually a wise choice because there's still a lot of solid choices in basic or classic. And because they design it this way, I feel like it makes it a lot easier to avoid the problem of, say, a card like Deathstalker Rexxar ran into when you had to consider more beast combinations and stuff. Anyhow,
that's true.
You're not going to get offered cards that aren't good, so you're not going to get a Bloodfen Raptor offered to you. If your opponent has a wide board and you play him when you have, like, say, 9 mana, you play him for 2, you'll probably get offered a Flame Strike because 7 mana will help clear that board. If you play him right on turn 2 when you haven't done too much in the game yet, he'll give you choices like Wild Growth to help you develop the board, or Brightwing, which gives you some more resources, or maybe Animal Companion, which next turn will give you a body. I'm really fascinated. This, I will say right now, if I don't open this thing up, I craft it. It's an auto craft. This is a card that I will play with just like how I play Reno Jackson and a whole ton of decks in Wild. And the thing, that's another thing too. The ramifications it has for Wild, this will go into every Reno deck. I don't know if Reno is going to be replaced by Zephyrus. Call it a Zephyrus deck from now on. I don't know. But
yeah, kind of.
This card's amazing. Of course, we hear what it can do, and it'll be interesting to see in execution just how well it does what it does. And I'm sure we'll have a lot of stories to tell. Again, it's great fodder for trolling videos for amazing and lucky plays. It's weird because this kind of takes the luck out of it in a way. It's like if you're in a tight situation, you play Zephyrus if you have a Highlander deck, and you, in theory, will get offered something that will hopefully get you out of the bind that you're in.
Honestly, the thing he reminds me of the most is the Wondrous Wisdom Ball.
Right?
In some ways, in that it's like yes, you have to build your deck around it with having just singletons and whatnot. But, I mean, you drop him and something good is going to happen. And to be clear, he takes into consideration not only the turn you're on, but the turn you're coming up to. Mm-hmm. So like Brian's example of putting him down on 2 and then having Wild Growth on 3 is strong. I mean, it just knows that that's a good 3 drop for you.
On turn 3, you're not going to get offered a 6 mana card.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, but it goes even further than that. It's basically, it's taking into consideration all those factors that you brought up. So let's say your opponent's board is filled with 4 health minions and you're on turn 6. You could drop him and get a Flame Strike for next turn. Or if you're on turn 9, you could drop him and get a Flame Strike for that turn. Or Brawl to clear out a full opponent's board. And also, he can spot lethal on board. He doesn't consider anything in your hand or stuff that you've played otherwise. But if you have just enough in your next turn to be able to do the damage to get someone down to 6, one of the options just might be Fireball. So, like, that's just insane. This is card design that cannot be done in any other format. Like, there are many things in Hearthstone that you could not recreate in the physical place, in this physical realm. But this one takes that to a whole new level. It's like this thing, I don't know. I can't even describe it. I'm so blown away by the effect that this thing has.
Yeah, and also looking at this article from Out of Cards, it talks a little bit more in detail about all this. But by the way, outof.cards is the site that we've used for most of this tonight to talk about stuff. I definitely recommend it. It's basically run by the people who used to have Hearthpwn. One thing that I think is hilarious is he can be very specific and offer Hungry Crab when facing Murlocs or Sacrificial Pact when facing Lord Jiraxxus. This is a hard counter to Jiraxxus, and I love it.
No, the fact that it even just does that. And I mean, who knows what'll happen in the future? Like, are there going to be other times when dropping him is just going to totally break open a strategy like Jaraxxus? So, yeah, no, this blows me away in every single way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, man, Zephyrus is going to be great against Warlock because sometimes Sacrificial Pact is going to be great against a lot of things. Against Warlock, it's one, you'll get a one mana spell to kill something and gain 5 life.
Yeah.
All for it.
No, I'm all for it. And I mean, I don't know. I this is not just a day one craft. I'm considering crafting this before I open the rest of my cards. because whatever I would have, like if I unwrap him, then, you know, it presumably if that was based on my luck timer or whatever, I would get another legendary. So, I mean, why not just craft this guy first?
I will also say this, if you get the pre-release bundle, which is, you know, either the 50 pack or 80 pack, or if you get both, either of those bundles gives you a golden legendary. Quite honestly, Kevin, there are a number of legendaries in this set where if I had the choice between a golden version of them or just dusting it to craft this, I would craft Zephyrus.
Oh, yeah. No question. He's the golden that I want in the game, I think, maybe. I don't know if I'd craft him right away. We'll see how things go. But no, yeah, that's a good point. Like, not to super sell these bundles or anything. He makes me wish that I could have afforded both somehow.
I'm just getting one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But my point is, I mean, even if you just got one of the quests out of that, that's, I mean, you get the, like, golden hero power for when you complete it. So, seems cool.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, no, it's a good set to have that free golden legendary on. But yeah, no, I'm out of words. I've run out.
Yep, absolutely. He's so cool. Mm-hmm. Well, I think I've run out of words too, and not too soon because this is, again, big card reveal preview shows that tend to be some of our largest, but with good reason. I'm glad we didn't keep it to just 5 cards for each of us. This is just really the tip of the iceberg. There are other cards that I'm sure we're both going to be talking about in the weeks to come.
I could call out the neutral dragon dude, or he's not a dragon, but the guy that the basilisk or whatever it is that's just deals 5 damage as a battle cry, and like there's just so much more that we could talk about, but it's just a crazy, maybe the craziest set ever. Zephyrus is definitely the craziest card ever. I'm totally on board.
In my opinion, I still think that Mean Streets of Gadgetzan was the craziest / best set Hearthstone has had. This one comes really close.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to see how it all plays out. Maybe it'll change your mind.
Maybe. If Zephyrus gives me everything I wish for, then if he can make my wildest wishes come true, I'm all for it. Yeah. Until the next time in 2 weeks when we have plenty of stories and I'm sure a deck or two to talk to you guys about. Kevin, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, you can find me by going to @Multizord on Twitter. Some discords. How about you, Brian?
You can find me on Twitter @Rowow. That's R-H-O-W-O-W. Of course, I do a couple of podcasts, Realm Maintenance for all Blizzard games, Rolling Restart for World of Warcraft. And those shows in this one are all part of what I do with Realm Maintenance Productions. So if you want to support all of that stuff, you can go to patreon.com/realmpodcast. Of course, you can support the show in many other ways too. Give us reviews on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all that good stuff. We are on Twitter @HearthCasual. Send us an email at hearthcasual@gmail.com. We'd like to hear what you think of the show, what you'd like us to talk about possibly. And again, reviews, spreading word of mouth is always appreciated. I've noticed a slight over the last just month and a half an uptick in the number of downloads and listeners that we're getting recently. So for those who've just been listening to us for a few episodes now, welcome. I'm glad you're enjoying the show and hope to give you a lot more great stuff in the weeks to come.
Hope we sold you on Zephyrus if you weren't already.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's Zephyrus is my favorite card of the entire set, hands down. And I think a lot of people are going to agree with that. I did not think that Reno Jackson could be topped as far as a Highlander mechanic card goes, and they did the thing.
Yep, and you were right earlier when you said you could play both of them in Wild.
Right, yeah, away. It's great.
Yeah, it is.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for now. We will talk to you again in 2 weeks. For Kevin Ellis, this is Brian Black, wishing you all a very happy Saviors of Old Doom pre-release or release, and I hope all your wishes come true. Take care, folks.
This podcast is part of the Frozen Fox Media Network. Visit us at frozenfoxmedia.com for information about this and all the other content we offer. You can also find us on Twitter at Frozen Fox Media. Frozen Fox Media, cool content for the gaming community.